know what time it is. It's time to bring the rain.
Zinc Media. Feel the power of knowledge.
Here it is, Monday, July number 16 in the year of our Lord 2018. Hour number 2 gets underway right now on this sunny morning. If you missed my monologue at the start of the program, I do apologize. There may have been some technical glitches or issues this morning. I hear the Spreaker sometimes jumps backwards in time. On the live program, I don't understand how that works either. But we're not just talking about doing stuff about that here. We're actually getting solutions and trying to implement those solutions so they act to the point where they actually work. So you don't have to experience all this technical babble, mumbo jumbo, crapola that happens every once in a while, or all too often. With using a third-party type of system like Spreaker. But it's good for what it is. It's like I've always said about Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio is good for what it is. At some point, people, if they want to do more than what they're doing on Blog Talk Radio, they have to gurgitate away from there and move on to something bigger, better, different. They've got to upset the apple cart. They've got to upset their world order. Nobody ever gets anywhere or does anything by not upsetting the world order. I mean, you've always got to do that. But, of course, we don't call it upsetting the world order. We call it, today, the term is disrupt. You know, millennials, they disrupted business in various genres of business. And now it is a cool thing in business to be a disruptor. But evidently it is not a cool thing to be a disruptor in politics. But we've got a disruptor in the form of Donald J. Trump. And he's actually, like business, he's coming up with stuff that actually works, that people like and want and can utilize. And who are the folks that are fighting them? Well, like business, it's the big old look. This whole thing about disruption is nothing. Business disruption is nothing new. Well, Henry Ford disrupted business as usual back in his day. And then those wonderful automakers, and there was a ton of automakers in this country, folks. And then those automakers, back in the day, they became the status quo. And a lot of them said, well, you know what? You don't really have to innovate. You only innovate in order to keep up with your competition. If your competition isn't innovating, then you don't really need to innovate. That's how you ran a well-run corporation. You just keep doing what you've been doing. Look how long Henry Ford made the Model T. I mean, he didn't really change it at all. Because if it wasn't broken, why fix it, right? Why innovate? He would always tear apart his son, Edsel, who tried to innovate. And Henry Ford is like, we don't need to innovate. What the hell's wrong with you? It's not how you run a good corporation. You don't innovate like this. Well, Edsel was a disruptor, just like his dad, and his dad couldn't take it. There's another person in that was a disruptor. He was a disruptor so bad that they ran him out of town. They ran him out of business. That was Tucker. Remember that Tucker, a man in his car. Another disruptor was DeLorean. Anybody remember him from the 80s? He was such a disruptor that in order to get rid of him, they had to frame him for drug possession and drug trafficking. Yeah, he did it, but they set him up to do it, folks. Don't doubt me on that. That's how evil these people can be when you're trying to disrupt the status quo. Today you've got Donald Trump, who's a political disruptor big time, and just about everybody out there in the worldwide swamp doesn't like him. Because he's disrupting the standard status quo. Hey, Trump, don't go and sit down with Putin and actually fix anything because you're going to disrupt the world order that we spent so long talking about setting up. Well, let me tell you something. To you European idiots out there, your world, it's only the world order in your view, because the rest of the world doesn't view it the same way. Because in the rest of the world's view, your world order means that they remain a third world country. China, India, and African nations do not want to be third world countries. They want to be first world countries. They want to experience what it's like to be first world and have all that wonderful stuff that other first world countries have. They want the money, power, prestige, and clout. Mostly the money. And you want to keep them as the world status quo. You want to keep them third world. They don't want that. Even those wonderful dictator countries understand, you know, you got some oppressive dictator. They understand how, you know, maybe if they improve their economy a little bit, it would benefit them as a dictator because they'd get a stronger handle on power, and they'd have more money. The new world dictators are starting to figure this out. Kim Jong-un is probably the first big one to figure it. You know what? If I talk to this Trump guy and he actually does half of what he says that we could do here in North Korea, I could become one of the wealthiest people on the planet. And I would secure my power here being dictator in North Korea. Yeah, let's do that. That would be cool, man. Now, I don't think it would necessarily be cool that, you know, his power gets entrenched. But look, you got these younger dictators that are thinking about this stuff now. They're not like what's-his-face down at Maduro down in Venezuela. His days are numbered. If he were smart, he'd try to bring Venezuela's economy back to the point where people would say, oh, we love you, mwah, mwah, mwah. We love you, dictator, mwah, mwah, mwah. Some dictators are actually doing that. They're disruptors. But those wonderful world swamp people, especially those in Europe, they don't want to disrupt the world order. It was, you know, it was nice and neat and tidy. You had the winners, you had the losers, and they got to dictate who were the winners, and they got to dictate who were the losers. And, you know, U.S. presidents, that Ronald Reagan guy, he didn't play along very well. But, you know, George H.W. Bush played along, and then you had Clinton that played along, and W. Bush played along, and then you had the wonderful guy who really played along. He was so wonderful, Obama. And now you got this guy who doesn't play well. He doesn't play nicely with others in the sandbox. And he's going to disrupt everything. And it's terrible. You know, he's so disruptive that we even threatened to take our toys and go home. And he said, good, go home. Try doing something without the USA. He called our bluff. It's just not right. The United States always pays our bills. They always do what we want to our benefit. This is not fair. Don't disrupt the current world order. Because we've always dictated who the winners and losers are. We've always dictated who was going to be first world and third world. And Donald Trump is saying that anybody could be first world. That's not the way it's done. Well, that is the way it's going to be done. Because we're going to be giving the world 4 years of Donald Trump. Possibly eight. And these people are going to figure out, possibly for the first time in modern history, that in order to get anywhere in life, in order to raise their countries out of desperate poverty, even if they're currently under a dictatorship, they're going to have to be disruptive, because those in the power right now do not want them to rise. And frankly, it has nothing to do with money on their part at all. It's all about power. It's all about them keeping that power. Oh, we have this. We're the only ones that can manage this entire planet. Everything has to be done with purpose, and it must take time. If you want to build your economy, you third world heathens, it's going to take you a century and a half. It's just going to take time. You can't do it overnight. And Trump's saying, well, you know, you can basically do this overnight. So he's going to take that kind of message to put, hey, Vlad, look. Come on, dude. I know that we've had some, you know, we've had our issues over the past, you know, 100 years or so, you know, USSR and now you're Russia. But come on. Honestly, let's do something that's win-win here. The United States wins, Russia wins, you win. You know, you get to make things easier for you. You know, you want Germany to keep buying 70% of their natural gas from you? We got to do something here. Got to change some stuff. Now, is all this going to happen overnight? No. Is it going to take decades for it to change? No. Is there going to be some actionable output from this message, from this meeting with Putin? I believe there will, because Trump is a man of action, not just a man of words. If there is an agreement on something, he's going to expect proof. Little rocket man of North Korea. Yeah, we want to, you know, denuclearize. Great, do it. Don't talk about it. Do it. Do it now. And he's pressing for the do it now type of thing. We talked about that they should get rid of their nuclear weapons. And we talked about how they could best do it. And what we'd give it. You know, we're going to give them money beforehand to help them denuclearize. And it didn't work before, but hey, there's something that we talked about this time. And we talked about what we talked about last time, and how that this time after we get done talking, that they can't do what we talked about last time because, you know, and we're going to come back together in about a year and talk about what they did. Or didn't do. That's the way it's been. That's not the way it's going to continue to be. Yeah, we talked. You're going to execute? You're going to execute on what we talked about. You don't execute on what we talked about? We got a problem. Hey, little rocket man. I want you to have hotels on your beaches. You don't want hotels on your beaches? Fine, we'll bomb your beaches. It's called execution, not just talk. Trump isn't all about talk. There's a difference between execution and talk. Speaking of execution and talk, the left is another term for execution is, you know, killing someone. The left is killing themselves. Anybody remember the, well, of course you remember, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Well, I told you folks, didn't I tell you last week that she should listen to me when it comes to this rumor that was spreading that there was going to be an actual debate before the election between her, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and her female counterpart on the right, Candace Owens, conservative. And I said Ocasio-Cortez should not do it because Owens has nothing to lose and Cortez has everything to lose. And in fact, no matter what she said or did, she was going to lose. And simply because, not because I knew that I know that Cortez is so brilliant. I know the woman is daft. You know, she's an airhead. That's a term we used to use back in the 70s and 80s and 90s. We used to call, you know, people that were vapid, we just called them airheads. Today we just call them leftists. We call them millennials, I guess, right? But that's not true of that's not true of all millennials. Not all millennials are airheads. But this one is. She has no clue. She's a democratic socialist, and she's a self-avowed, self-identified democratic socialist. And but no, Miss Ocasio-Cortez is not part African-American. At least she's saying she's not. She's all Latino, Puerto Rican, you know, that type of thing. She's not... She looks like she could be black, right? No, she's just a Latino. Well, what is it? Because she's got brown skin? She's got to automatically be half black or something? That's not the way that works, by the way. Just saying. But according to her, she's just 100% Latino. Okay? Just putting that out, because I know some people are saying, well, she kind of looks black. Well, I don't think so, but okay. So she's out there talking about, she was giving an interview, and she was talking about Israel. And says that Israel is an occupier of Palestine. Now, first, there's no such thing as Palestine. I mean, let's be historically accurate here. No such thing as Palestine. You all know that. And even you leftists out here that listen to this program, if you listen long enough, you know that to be factual as well. There is no such thing as Palestine. It's a made-up territory, made-up country that never existed before. That they just thought and they had no choice to make it up. Go back and look at history. Read a book. They had no choice but to make it up back in the day when they were creating Israel. Because they thought by doing so, the dumbest thing. Oh, well, let's try to create peace in the Middle East by creating an area or a country, try to create a country that's diametrically opposed to the peaceful existence of Israel. That makes sense. Just to appease them. You know, just to appease those who don't like, you know, Jews in the Middle East. Let's appease them by giving them a country that is going to be focused completely on Israel's destruction. Yeah, that makes a whole hell of a lot of sense. But anyway, you got Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who attacks Israel verbally by calling them occupiers of the non-existent, never-before-seen Palestine. Now, when she was pressed on what she meant, she struggled to give an answer and then admitted on the air, on recording, that she doesn't have a clue about what she's talking about. Well, at least look, you know, like alcoholics, the first, what's the first step? Admitting you have a problem. What's the first step of a leftist? Admitting they don't know anything. But this is the kind of people that the Democrat Party wants to now embrace. This is the direct. You know, we can probably sit here and laugh about this, folks. But let me tell you how dangerous this is. In other words, they are pulling a Bart Simpson. Remember back in the 90s, the big thing about Bart Simpson is Bart Simpson was a proud underachiever. And parents didn't want their kids to pick up that underachievement type of thing. Because, you know, after all, parents in this day, even leftist parents back then in the 90s, they were all about overachievement. You know, overscheduling their kids and getting them into the best kindergarten and preschool. It was all about overachievement. And along comes Bart Simpson being proud to be an underachiever, and parents were aghast by it. Underachiever? Well, now you've got an entire political party and political machine and political system that is lifting up underachievers and claiming they are the future of politics. So in other words, some of these rank-and-file members of the new Democrat Party are going to be total airheads, and that's okay for them. And they're going to promote them. They're going to... This whole notion of having an education, oh, they're vapid on this stuff. There is no education. It's all indoctrination. They have no idea why they believe what they believe. They don't. You try to ask, you ax them. Well, what do you mean by that? Well, you know what I mean. No, I don't. I want you to explain it. I don't need to explain it to you. Oh, because you can't. Well, you know, it is. If you don't understand, then you're just never going to get it. What? You know, I've actually been told that, folks. If you don't get it, you're never going to understand. Well, you got to explain it to me so I can get it, so I can understand. But they can't explain it. You know, it's all vapid. There's nothing real there, folks. There's nothing real in Alexandria's head. She doesn't know it. She doesn't know what the hell she's talking about. She runs around talking about that she's a democratic socialist, which is that's the same thing that they used to call East Germany. The DDR, Democratic, you know, Deutschland Republic. Were they really democratic? Hell no, they were communist. Well, there you, by the way, Venezuela and Cuba also call themselves democratic socialist.
Hello, America. It's me, your history. I remember a time when we thumbed our nose in a king's face, sent him packing. And when fascists and emperors talked a little bit too loud, we showed up, tore their cities to the ground, and then rebuilt them just to prove we could. We put men on the moon, we won a Cold War, and we elected fearless leaders who led fearless people. What the hell happened to you, America? Back in my day, we didn't elect a big-eared community organizer. We punched him in the kidney. Maybe it's time you came home, America. Home where you belong.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-595-2614 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 595-2614 to take your call now. Call 800-595-2614. That's 800-595-2614. Again, 800-595-2614.
We've all heard of male enhancement, but now there's an expert on true male enhancement in the areas that really count. In Herb Ellis's book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, you'll find answers to questions like, why doesn't she want to have sex? A quick start, quick results workout guide, plus what you can do as a side hustle to make money now. With all the great tips in this book, every man can benefit. Get the book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, on Amazon.com.
It started with a knock, but it wouldn't end there. What happens in the story next, many wouldn't understand, and most wouldn't believe. 5+2=Perfection by Samuel Rosette Jr. is a must-read. The scriptures within are reminders of the ancient past, and yet intriguingly infuses with texts which stand on the edge of the stage of relevancy. Available online at Westbow Press, Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, and SamuelRosetteJr.com.
Today, there's a beer for everyone.
Hey, me and the guys are going out for a beer. You want to come along?
Nah, I got a lot of data to enter into the computer tonight.
Now, there's a brew for the future.
Want me to bring you something back?
Thanks, but I got some right here.
Microsoft Brew.
You got a beer tap on your computer?
With a head so thick, you can float a mouse on it.
Let me get this straight. You make your own beer with the computer?
With the right software, you can do anything.
Microsoft Brew.
Here, I call this one Windows 95.
I don't know. It leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
And if you got to get there quicker, try the new ISDN malt liquor.
It was just another quiet Saturday at the Johnson home.
Honey, have you seen the hammer?
It's in the garage.
Oh, no, not the garage.
Later that same day...
Dad, I can't find the bicycle pump.
Son, I'm afraid it's in the garage.
The garage?
Then the following Tuesday...
Howard, where's the car?
It's in the garage.
Does your garage look like a giant yard sale without the yard? Do you cringe at the thought of entering your garage? Then you need Crest Garage Cabinets. With one phone call, those wonderful folks at Crest will come out to your home, design the best combination of cabinets for you, and install them quickly and professionally before your very eyes.
It's a miracle.
And unlike other companies who ask for a down payment or money up front, you won't pay a penny until your Crest cabinets are installed to your satisfaction. So call Crest today, toll free at 1-800-548-2848. That's 1-800-548-2848. And you'll never fear going into your garage again.
Here at Tide, we want to revolutionize the taste, texture, and look of your everyday laundry detergent snack. We've mixed three different definitely non-toxic chemicals together in one package of dumb American, well, food. The chemicals work together to give your taste buds a deep cleaning of pure refreshment and whatever else this piece of tastes like. You know, I would prefer some pizza rolls, but I guess everyone else in America is eating these. Just listen to this lady we're about to cut to.
Are you trying to make an after-school snack for your kids every day, but you just suck at cooking, or you're broke so you can't buy food? Well, there's a cheap alternative.
Fun fact, Tide Pods prevent cancer.
And once you're done eating that garbage, you just close the lid and put it back in the shelf, even though you're going to take it down again in 0.27 seconds because they're so good.
Tide Pods. I'm loving it.
The most politically incorrect black man in America. You're listening to The Rod Eckel Show.
Celebrity chef and travel host gave an interview back in February of this year, and in this interview he's made some astonishing claims, accusations, whatever, and it's being published now a month after his suicide. Yes, his death was ruled a suicide. So there's an interview that's been published a month after his suicide. Celebrity chef unloads on rapey, gropey, and disgusting Bill Clinton. Yes, he went after Bill Clinton. And he hoped Weinstein is beaten to death in jail. Now, I know some people are probably saying, well, Rod, you can't talk about this kind of stuff. And I'm like, yes, I can. And second of all, because he gave the interview, and the interview was published in this magazine called Popula, P-O-P-U-L-A. So he gave a lengthy interview, evidently, to Maria Bastillos, who is the founder and managing editor of this magazine called Popula. I've never heard of it, but okay. Now, in this interview conducted in February and just published over this past weekend, Bourdain slammed Bill Clinton's handling of his sexual misconduct allegation. He also condemned Hillary Clinton for her role in destroying all those women. Now, this comes out because Bourdain is one of the most, he was one of the most outspoken male supporters of the hashtag Me Too movement. And he said he would like to have seen Weinstein beaten to death in his cell. He also touched on the Trump era by saying he would compromise his principles for some effing competency. Oh, you mean like Bill Clinton? Guess he was competent. He also said Jared Kushner's eyebrows appeared to be manscaped, and said Kushner was a born snitch. Now, I don't know what that means. Jared Kushner is a born snitch. Is he saying that Kushner is on Mueller's team then? Getting all the inside dirt on Donald Trump? I'm not coming to any conclusion on that. Look, I'm always honest with you. Quite frankly, now I know he's Ivanka's husband. I get it. But, you know, I'm with some people. I don't exactly know where Jared Kushner comes down. I question his loyalty. Now, let's face it. He's the man, and his loyalty lies with his family, the Kushner house, not the Trump house. And I know some people are saying, well, he's the son-in-law. That doesn't matter. He's not a Trump. He's a Kushner. He comes from House Kushner, and he does not have to show loyalty to House Trump. House of Trump. That is just not the way it's going to work. Sorry. Now, the Kushner family is they're not as wealthy as Trump is, but their influence is pretty far and wide. They're no slouches. They're not slouches, just so you know. But there's just something about, not that I don't trust him, but there's just something I can't quite put my finger on about the boy. Well, he's not a boy. He's like 36, 37 years old. He's a man. He's a millennial. Maybe that's just it. He's one of the leading edge, one of the first millennials out there. You know, he's one of the older ones. Maybe that's it. It's just because he's a millennial, and when it comes to millennials like that, you know, I have to now look. I know quite a few millennials that are very responsible. They're very adult. They're very conservative. And I know millennials that are just like, are you kidding me? You know, you're 35 years old. Time for you to grow up already. But there's just something about Kushner that I can't put my finger on yet. I'm sure I'll figure it out one of these days. And usually my instincts are usually dead on when it comes to things like this. And I hope it's just I'm hoping that it isn't going to end up hurting Trump, but instead will end up helping him. And I have no doubt that Kushner really wants to try to help Trump, but he has his own agenda. He really, folks, understand that Jared Kushner has his own agenda. It may not match up with Donald Trump. But that is par for the course with a lot of people in any administration. You know, they all have their own agendas, and a lot of times that when you get down to brass tacks, a particular, you know, micro agenda doesn't actually add up with the president's. I mean, their macro agenda might. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on, in that president's administration. But their micro agenda doesn't always jive. And I don't think necessarily that the micro agenda of Jared Kushner is going to fully and completely match up with President Trump's micro agenda. Now, think of that of what you will. But that's how I see it. And maybe there's something on Jared Kushner's micro agenda. I'm not going to go any further and say any more about that other than, yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, Bourdain is saying that this whole rapey, gropey, grabby thing out of the effing monstrous Bill Clinton. And he even used the term bimbo eruption. And he was using this describing former president as a piece of S-H-I-I-T, entitled rapey, gropey, grabby, and disgusting. Or Bourdain went on to condemn the way Clinton and his wife Hillary destroyed all those women who came forward with the allegations. And as we know, most of those allegations were very truthful. Yeah, so Bourdain was, you know, he on one hand, he was, you know, this hashtag Me Too thing, which means that he was probably leftist, but he was clashing with all these leftists for being hypocrites and evil people. Which leaves one to believe that maybe all that kind of dichotomy really sort of took its toll on him. He just couldn't live. I'm just saying, folks. I'm not saying that this, you know, who knows what this guy's demons were. Maybe he found out he had, I don't follow these. When these people take their lives, I don't follow them to try to figure out what was in their head. I mean, it's just, it's irrelevant. But maybe he found out that he had an incurable disease. Did he get cancer? Was that the final thing? Was that determined that he committed suicide, not because he was crazy out of his mind or what have you, or in such quote-unquote pain, but he found out he had incurable cancer? There's a close friend of mine whose mother, I think she was, you know, almost 70 years old. She committed suicide. Now, who does that at that age? Well, it's because she found out she had an incurable, contracted incurable cancer, and she didn't want to linger like that. So she took her own life early. I don't know if this was the case of Bourdain. It has been the case of some celebrities in the past, we know. I'm not saying it's an excuse for doing it. I'm just giving you reasons for these things. I don't know if this is the reason behind Bourdain's taking his own life and shocking the world, but it is a possibility. But in any case, it's also the possibility that he just couldn't match up his own beliefs with what was actually going on. It was driving him nuts, which is highly possible. Because look, when you're dealing with leftists, man, there's a lot they have to ignore in order to believe what they believe and say what they say. They've got to ignore an awful lot, and for some of them, it's not possible for them to reconcile. I get it. It is pretty funny. Not that he killed himself, but it's pretty funny that these people, they have a hard time reconciling when you bring up their hypocrisy. It really is. It's, you know, sometimes I'm mean that way, I guess. I'm a little bit devilish. I like to bring up a liberal, you know, leftist hypocrisy and watch their heads explode. Yeah. It's kind of, well, it's like the 4th of July. It's kind of fun. And I love it when they think that they've triggered me. And everybody around it's one of those wonderful things, like on Twitter, and you get people on social media. And you get this leftist, like on Twitter or Facebook, they think that they've triggered me, but everybody who's following the conversation, you know, they realize, well, geez, Rod, you're not being very nice triggering this person this way. In other words, they all know that I'm the one that actually triggered them, not the other way around, which is really kind of it, because they don't even realize it. They become rabid dogs. And then when they do realize it, then... And that's when they really go apeshit, and then all of a sudden they disappear. And then they try to post when they, you know, put a final post on. I tend to let these kind of people get the last word in. Because I get to the point where I just say, you know, silly rabbit, tricks are made for kids, you dismiss. And when I dismiss a person like that, that pisses them off. Oh, man, that sets them over the edge. Who do you think you can't dismiss me? Well... Yeah, I can, because there's only two of us having this debate, and I'm telling you I'm done with this debate because you're useless. That triggers them to no end. And usually they'll go away, but only to come back later when they think that I'm not online or not paying attention and try to give a last. And I always read them because I get notified of it. But I rarely respond. I just laugh at them because they all follow the it must be taught. Is this being taught? Are these seminar social media posters? You know, Rush Limbaugh talks about seminar callers. I think we got seminar social media posters. They take classes or whatever seminars on how to post and the format of their posts, because they're all the same. They're all the same. When you get called out in your hypocrisy, call them a name. That's it. And then if they really get to you too much and you feel like you've been triggered, then go away and then post when you think they're not online. Because that's the way they always do it. And some of you out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because I've seen your discussions. You've gotten into some, you know, discussions with leftists as well. And usually what I see is the leftists always getting triggered first and getting triggered early in the conversation or the debate and then just going off the rails. It's the funniest thing. It really, no, I'm not saying that people on the right can't be triggered and don't get triggered. Some people do. But usually when I see a right person, a person on the right get triggered is after they've triggered the leftist, and the leftist just says or does something that is totally off the wall. That's what usually happens. Although this might be something should we save this for maybe next hour? I've got so much other stuff to go over here for the next hour. We'll get to Gowdy next hour, I guess. First of all, New Hampshire, something in my own home state. Governor Chris Sununu. He has signed they're calling it a controversial measure that will limit the number of college students and military personnel who can vote in state elections. The bill signed into law over the weekend is the source of partisan bickering in the state house, and it has been for years, will require registered voters be a permanent resident of New Hampshire, obtain a state driver's license within 60 days of voting, and register their vehicles in New Hampshire. The new law takes effect in 2019, which is after the midterm elections, obviously, in 2018. And this should be a no-brainer. I don't know why this is controversial. If you're going to vote here or in any state, you need to be a resident of that state. Now, look, I remember my parents doing certain things when my father was in the Air Force, doing certain things. When we were stationed in Michigan, they never considered themselves to be residents of Michigan. For the majority of our time being stationed at Kenneth I. Sawyer Air Force Base outside of Marquette, Michigan, they had New York plates on the vehicle. Why? Because they identified with being New York State residents. And then, they did make some changes before he got reassigned, which was ironic. Because it got to the point where it was better for them to register and become real residents of Michigan instead of New York. And then that's when we got Michigan plates. But military, they have this opportunity or this ability to be a floater if they want to be. But they need to really vote, be able to vote in their home state, in their home community. Now, I know it's a little bit difficult to say because they don't live there, Rod. Well, yeah, I get that. But understand, a college student doesn't live in the town that they're going to school in. Because what's the first thing most college kids do? Every significant you know, break or vacation, they're gone. They're back home or someplace else. They're not in their college town. In places where they have a large college population, what you have is a bunch of temporary residents who are only going to be there for 2 to 4 years and who aren't there all year round, that are making decisions that the people who actually live there all year round have to put up with all year round. I don't have a problem with this. This is a logical, common sense type of thing. If you're going to vote in that particular area, you've got to declare yourself as being a permanent resident. And one of those ways of proving that you're a permanent resident is putting down roots by, you know, registering your car and getting a driver's license in that particular state. I don't care where it is. You're not going to, you know, well, I don't really live here, but I'm going to vote here. Now, New Hampshire is currently the only U.S. state that does not require registered voters to be permanent residents in order to cast a ballot. The rule allows thousands of college and university students who study in the Granite State to cast votes in the precinct where they live, even if they remain residents of another state, so long as they do not vote in their home state. So what do you think that they're going to do? How do you find that out? We were the only state in the union that did not require registered voters to be permanent. And this is controversial, evidently, to require that, you know, we do what 49 other states do. How is this controversial? Well, it's controversial because it means that places like Keene, New Hampshire might now not be so liberal because of the college. Because what it means is Dartmouth up there, on the border with Vermont might not be, well, it's still going to be liberal, but it might not be as liberal as it currently is. Because you won't have all those wonderful upper crust, upper class, you know, leftist students being able to determine what goes down up there on an annual basis, on a yearly basis, every single day. The people and the residents of Keene are not going to have to be dependent on what the students of Keene State College dictate. The same goes out there with, in Durham, New Hampshire, where the University of New Hampshire's flagship university is, the HQ, if you will. All of that stuff in 2019 and beyond is going to change dramatically. And we're not doing anything different. We're actually doing what every other state in the union already does and already requires. But yet, doing that, which is the right thing to do, is somehow controversial. Now, Republicans have been frustrated by the influx of student voters who tend to back Democratic candidates, especially as the state has become one of the most closely fought battlegrounds in the country. Now, Hillary Clinton beat Donald Trump, President Trump in New Hampshire, by just some 3,000 votes, or about 0.3 percentage points in 2016. And Senator Maggie Hassan defeated now former Senator Kelly Ayotte by just 1,000 votes that same year. And all of this was predicated on these temporary resident voters, like these students coming into the state and doing what, in other words, legitimized voter fraud. That's how Hillary Clinton won and how Kelly Ayotte lost. By the way, the story, which is written by The Hill, says that Sununu, who replaced Hassan in the governor's mansion, New Hampshire doesn't have a governor's mansion. We don't have a governor's mansion. Governors don't live in a state governor's house. I know some states do have that. We don't. But this is how The Hill is report. We don't. You could say the state house, but we don't have a mansion. Governors of this state do not. They live in their own houses. Voters between the ages of 18 and 24 favor Democratic candidates in all three races, according to exit polls. But Sununu beat out Hassan by 17,000 votes, or excuse me, beat out his Democratic candidate rival by 17,000 votes, even though it was heavily Democrat favored. Because you know a lot of college students don't live up north, because there aren't a lot of universities up. I mean, there's Plymouth State College. There, again, those kids are not going to be able to vote in Plymouth, New Hampshire. That's going to change that's going to change a lot of dynamics in many towns across the state, and that's a good thing. And frankly, supposedly, every single other state in the union has this sort of law. You got to at least say that you are a permanent resident of the state, register your driver's license and vehicle in the state, and give a permanent address within the state in order to vote there. New Hampshire was the only one that didn't require that, and somehow Sununu has just signed a very controversial bill into law, which doesn't take effect until 2019, missing the 2018 midterms.